how students, for example, primary school up until like poly age, they are so caught up with the high academic rigor of the Singapore education, which, might I add, is world-class according to one of the various news reports. But how do you think we can work as a community to balance providing a quality, rigorous education in Singapore while also giving youths the opportunity to explore their career aspirations?
So thanks for joining us on the CNA Youth Forum, everyone. According to recent studies, youth in Singapore list their family members as amongst the first people that they turn to for advice on personal problems and important life decisions. But that doesn't mean that youth agree with their parents all the time, and we'll see that showing very clearly in our upcoming video. So let's take a look.
Very deep.
Yes, I am.
My definition of success is one thing I agree with my mom on about a stable job, stable pay. But at the same time also, I guess I'm from a different generation where we may be in having stable jobs or high paying jobs. But that sense of fulfillment may still be lacking.
To me, he already has a good job. What else he wants? He can, of course, further his study, get a master or get married lah.
I've always wanted to seek working overseas, especially like to teach English in maybe one of the ASEAN countries. Pay-wise, I'm not so particular. It's more of the experiences lah, and also being independent to test myself, being out of my comfort zone.
You know, as long as he pursue his fulfillment in Singapore, I'm very happy. I like to see him to have a home, you know, with his family. I would like to see my grandchildren, you know, if possible, and, you know, play with them and all that. Why he want to go for overseas out of his comfort zone? Well, people want to be comfortable. Why he doesn't want to be? That's what I don't understand, right?
Currently, we are all put under very large amount of stress at school because it's a rat race. Whoever gets the best, get into the best school, good paying jobs. And that is why I am very afraid for my future. The amount of pressure that society puts on us students and myself, that takes a toll on me sometimes. And then when I sometimes approach you all, I get shut down for it.
If you want to look great on paper, a lot of time needs to be spent, which means a lot of sacrifice can be made. We let you decide everything, and I think that helped you.
Yeah, Hilmi and Ovi, yeah, give them a big round of applause. Well, thank you for the interviews. I think we all have gone through that, right? We have all gone through that. I've gone through that with my parents too. I would say for a start, let's take the approach that our parents want the best for us. I think we should all agree. Right? They may disagree with our views, they may have different perspectives, but I think all of them want the best for us in their own ways. In my own experience, when I was growing up, I didn't quite have these kinds of conversations with my parents because they pretty much left me to decide what I wanted to do in life. Fortunately, their attitude was, firstly, don't take your education for granted, because they didn't get much of a chance to go to school. My mother almost didn't get a chance to go to school, but she did, became a teacher. So she was always, you know, focused on don't take your education for granted, make good use of the opportunity and do your best in your studies. If you can get to university, well and good. If you can't get to university, so be it. Then go and work, right? That was her attitude. And if you want to go overseas to study, well, good luck to you, because we can't afford sending you overseas. You go and find your own resources and means. So that was their general attitude in life. And I did whatever I wanted to do. Managed to get a scholarship, go overseas, study. When I came back, like Hilmi, I wanted to go overseas to work too. We all have this overseas itch, right? So I wanted to go. I applied to join MFA, because I thought, very exciting, I can go overseas, I can be independent, I can, you know, venture into new areas. But I was rejected. They decided maybe I was not good enough, so I didn't get a job in MFA. Instead, I started work in the trade and industry. And then after a few years of work, I thought maybe I should join the private sector and try something different. And then my bosses talked to me and persuaded me to stay on in the public sector. So I stayed on and I stayed on. And the longer I stayed, the more I realized the job in the public service was very fulfilling because I could do a lot more to help people. And then I decided I would just stay on. And I've been staying on in public service for 25 years, 15 in the civil service, and then now 10 in politics. So my point is, whatever you may think about doing in life today, recognize that it is a process of discovery. It will change along the way, right? Whatever you feel very strongly now, in 10 years' time, you may have a different view. And there is so much, there's a long road ahead of you. So keep your options open. Talk to different people. Get different perspectives. Be prepared to try, experiment. And eventually, I think you will have many opportunities to pursue your passion and to realize your full potential in whatever you want to do. So that's my general advice. But let's open up and see if there's anyone who would like to share more and ask questions. Yes.
Morning, I'm Cindy. I'm a social innovator. So I think on this topic, right, I'm just quite curious to know, right, I think on the culture of how work is going to transform and change. So a lot of youths are actually in the gig economy, and they're really looking at jobs that are very different, more of the gig economy, where they may not fit into the design of, like, you know, the CPF contributions. And I actually went through that journey when I was a youth, you know, seeking that freedom to be a social entrepreneur. And as an entrepreneur, you really don't have, you know, that bandwidth to really look at how you're actually putting in the money. Where else, like, when you actually have a full-time employment, you already start making that contributions. I'm just wondering whether the government will really look at how we're redesigning, you know, how we're going to have, you know, the forced savings for the younger generation, where we are seeking a very different career aspiration and a journey that may be very different from our parents.
Sure. Thanks, Cindy, for that. It's something that we are looking at, particularly for the group of freelance workers who are more vulnerable, right? Because we worry that some of them, for example, working on platforms, deliveries, they may not be saving sufficiently for their retirement. So we are looking at presently how we can adjust, strengthen our system, so that we can have work with the platform companies and ensure that they too will be able to build up their retirement savings. But we don't think this needs to apply to everyone in the freelance sector, because people go into the freelance sector for different reasons, and some of them may genuinely, they prefer that flexibility and they don't want to be tied down into a long-term employment relationship. They genuinely prefer to have that flexibility. But the avenue for them as freelance remains for them to still be able to, as self-employed persons, to be able to contribute to their own CPF, which means then we must educate them. We must help them to understand the importance. Yes, you desire flexibility in your job, but please also start thinking about planning for your longer-term financial needs, including your retirement needs.
Okay, hi, DPM Wong. So I'm Kishore, a final year student from Ngee Ann Polytechnic. What are your thoughts on how can Singapore keep its economy competitive while maintaining growth even as our economy matures, especially given when our GDP growth has been slowing down for the past few decades? What is of a concern to me is youth my age going out in the working world 5-10 years down the road, will they be able to find a good paying job in a field of their passion and interests? Yeah.
Thank you. It is a concern for us, but I think we should not just look at the headline growth number and then worry that, oh, things are declining. It is bound to happen, right? It is bound to happen. In the 70s, 80s, we could grow at double digits, but we were from a very low base. Then you grow at 8%, 10%. Now our economy is at this level, much higher. So when you are a more advanced economy, yes, your growth rate will naturally be no, less than what it used to be. So we will grow at 2-3%. But even that, on a high base, is very good growth. Right? So we shouldn't just worry about the number coming down. I think what's more important, as you rightly said, is that we have a competitive economy, that companies want to come to Singapore to do business here. And when they come here, they will create more jobs and more opportunities for Singaporeans. And fortunately for us, this is still the case today. In fact, in the last 3 years of tackling COVID, I think Singapore's reputation globally has been enhanced. People have seen how we've tackled the pandemic together as one people. And I think that has enhanced investor confidence in Singapore. That's why companies want to be here to set up their regional operations, their regional headquarters, to do R&D, to do cutting-edge projects here in Singapore. We welcome them. We want to stay open so that they can bring their best teams in Singapore and then work with Singaporeans, create more jobs, more opportunities. So I'm confident we can do all that. And there will be many more opportunities across all the different fields of the economy for all of you to pursue. A few lollipops. Okay.
Right. Yeah. Hi. My name is Ayn. I'm a software developer, and I also volunteer with various community organizations to raise awareness of learning and career opportunities in the IT industry. So one challenge with engaging, let's say, career switchers who want to consider a tech career is they wish they had learned it earlier, which leads into the topic of how students, for example, primary school up until like poly age, they are so caught up with the high academic rigor of the Singapore education, which, might I add, is world-class according to one of the various news reports. But how do you think we can work as a community to balance providing a quality, rigorous education in Singapore while also giving youths the opportunity to explore their career aspirations, not just in the IT industry or the growth sectors, but areas like healthcare, for example?
Thank you. Thank you very much. I think a few lollipops went up, so maybe we take a few questions. Oh, so many. Let's do a few at a time. Yeah.
Okay, good morning, DPM. I'm Zhihui. Thank you so much for spending time with us. So actually, I have quite a similar question. I'm fresh out of school this year, hopefully still trying to be a lifelong student. Yeah, I just wanted to ask, like a lot of my friends are thinking whether we should specialize early. I studied psychology. A lot of my friends are thinking whether they should, you know, do their master's and their PhD now. Balancing that with, say, trying out a range of experiences, upskilling. For example, for me, I'm running my own business to acquire more business skills as well, and even settling down early. So I would say, like, you know, what's your advice when balancing these different priorities in life? And, you know, what do you think people of my generation should look forward to?
Great. Thank you. Anyone with a related comment, maybe, so that we can take some, anything related? Yes, please.
Good morning, DPM. Nice to meet you. My name is Sharmishta. I'm a member of NYC's In Spirit and also a volunteer with Sinda Youth Club. So my question is actually related to the workplace and identity, connected to what Kishore was referring to earlier. As a formerly overseas Singaporean, I actually moved back to Singapore to serve at MOM to work on foreign workforce policy.
Okay.
And I'm very glad to hear that you mention and assert Singapore's openness to foreign talent. How do we cultivate this global view for the new Singaporean worker? And I ask this because I feel very much Singaporean, but also a product of the different cultures and places that I have lived and worked. Thank you.
Thank you. Let's take these three comments, very important ones. First, the concern that maybe we have a culture where everyone focuses only on exams, exam performance, but then not really doing what they want to do, not thinking about pursuing their passions, and not having a culture of lifelong learning. This is something we hope we can address. We are trying very hard to address this. Again, it's about mindsets, but we hope we can change. You wanted to say something?
Yeah, my thinking is the opposite, where because there is high academic rigor in the Singapore education system, the students who are interested feel like they don't have the time or opportunities to explore other career aspirations because, for example, I've met students who, I want to attend this event, but I have exams, I need to study, or they also have additional extracurricular activities so that they can stay competitive on their resume. So there's these concerns, and I was hoping to hear more about it. Yeah, thank you.
I understand, which is why if the focus is on exams, then obviously very little time for anything else, right? Because all your priorities and energies is on the exam result, which is, I think, a little bit too much energies and attention has been placed on that. So we are trying to shift that emphasis towards more holistic learning and giving people more time, more space to explore other things outside of the school curriculum even. So that's what we are trying very hard to do. Again, we can do that in our school system, but it requires a mindset change too. Parents as well as students themselves. Don't be too seized by exam performance. I mean, frankly, when we hire people, I don't care what their PSLE grade is. I don't care what their O-level, A-level, poly GPA is. Not relevant. So why work so hard to score that extra point? We can be a bit more relaxed. Of course, do your best, but don't have to keep mugging for that extra point in the exams. And then hopefully that will free up time, free up your mental energies to focus on other pursuits. So I'm glad Zihui was talking about pursuing a culture of lifelong learning. That's what we hope to do. We have a whole life ahead of you to learn and to continue to pursue different things, and we want to encourage that. Then the question becomes, but what do I do after I finish studying? Let's say it's polytechnic or university. Do I work first, or do I take on that next investment in going for a further pursuit of academic, be it university, master's, or whatever? It's very hard to, give advice in a general sense, because it really depends on the sector that you are in and the area of work. Most places do not require advanced degrees at all, right? Most places, most work do not require advanced degrees. So if you are interested in a particular area of work that does not require an advanced degree, then maybe it's better to just get real life work experience first, find out more about the job, get some actual experience, and then learn more about what's going on in the industry before you think about pursuing that next course back in the university. But there may well be instances where the particular area that you are in, let's say you are very interested in biomedical science, and it's a very research-intensive area, and it's an area that requires a much higher level of academic rigor or expertise than what is provided at the bachelor's level, then yes, you may well proceed to do a master's or even a PhD if you are already decided quite early on that this is an area that you're focused on. So I it's very hard to generalize. It depends on the individual. It depends on the sector and industry you are in. But the key ultimately comes down to one basic point, that learning must continue beyond wherever you are now, whether you are in ITE, polytechnic, or university. Learning must go on after you enter the workplace, and we will look at how we can provide better opportunities for people to do that. After you have started work, how we can provide a more conducive environment where employers will support their staff to take time off from work to go for training. And we will also provide more resources for individuals to do that through SkillsFuture. We are studying some of these issues and seeing how we can enhance our system. And remember, when we go for that additional training, it has to be rigorous, right? We think about training and we say, I go for a one-day program, a one-day course on coding, and then I've become an expert coder. It doesn't happen. A one-day course doesn't give you very much rigorous training. It's at best a teaser program. It gives you a little bit of insights, but you've got to go deeper than that. So how can we provide more opportunities for everyone as you embark on your careers to really take time off from work from time to time and get a fresh injection of skills that will ensure you stay relevant and competitive throughout your careers? That's something we are studying, and we hope to enhance our system. And then on the point about keeping Singapore open, embracing foreign professionals, it's so essential. It is extremely essential for Singapore, and I hope all of you will keep this in mind, that it's not just something that we... It's essential is one thing, it's even existential, because the minute we close up and we put up barriers, it will be very hard for Singapore as a small little island to succeed and to create jobs and opportunities for our own people. So we must continue to have that mindset and attitude of being open, being big-hearted, welcoming foreign professionals into our shores so that we can do exciting projects together. But having said that, how can we sustain that support for an open economy? The one reality is that there are downsides to an open economy which we should understand. The downsides of being open includes being subject to more competition. It means that there may be more churn in the workplace. It means that later on, as you start work, you may see foreign professionals amongst you, and you can imagine for a Singaporean being very upset if a Singaporean is displaced, is retrenched, loses the job, but the foreigner next to him keeps the job. You can imagine, I mean, understandably, there will be a lot of unhappiness there. So what we must do and what we are looking at doing better is to provide a better system of support for Singaporeans at the workplace. And that better system of support includes providing more investments into the skill sets of Singaporeans, something I mentioned just now, enabling everyone to continue to upgrade your skills, to continue to stay competitive. It also includes us thinking about how we can provide more assurances and protections for Singaporean workers in the workplace. And that's something we are also studying, so that we want every Singaporean to feel that all of us are benefiting from an open economy. And if we feel that way, I think we can sustain Singapore as an open city and society for many more years to come.
Hi, DPM. My name is Han. I'm a startup founder and an adjunct lecturer. So first point is that I find that the boundary that stops a lot of young youths from going to startups is the high risk involved. So on this point, I have a suggestion, which is just like how we have CareShield and ElderShield, we may have want to have this thing called InnoShield. So basically, what it does is that it gives a buffer that for any startup founders, for example, if they fail in their startup, which is a high rate, they get maybe a 3 months income buffer. So any startup founders can actually contribute to this fund and get this protection. And I feel that this, in essence, would improve the innovation landscape in Singapore. And the second point is just as my viewpoint as an educator as well. I find that a lot of young people, especially in the tertiary education level, they do not have skills in terms of, for example, doing entrepreneurship or even doing innovative projects. So I think this could be started earlier, probably in the secondary school level, so that we can encourage more youths to be welcoming of failure and experimentation. Thank you so much.
Thank you. I think we are doing better than we used to, because when I speak to students now at our tertiary institutions, I find that a lot more of them are more prepared to do a startup, to go into entrepreneurial fields, than, say, when I was a student. In those days, when I was a student in the early 90s, almost everyone talked about being an employee. No one talked about being an entrepreneur and doing your own startup. Now I see a lot of difference, but obviously it's still work in progress, and there's a lot we can do and must do to encourage innovation. Of course, being innovative doesn't necessarily mean you must be a startup founder. Right? There are many ways of being innovative. You can be innovative as an employee, you can be innovative in the public service. We all need to embrace that spirit of innovation. So we will continue to encourage that mindset. And I hope that certainly, as we do more to encourage these mindsets, encourage people to go out of their comfort zones and explore their pursuits, as Hilmi says, do things that you would like to do without being labored negatively. As a quiet quitter or as someone that's pursuing a different path, as we have a more open, a more inclusive environment for people and individuals to pursue their own path, to innovate in their own journey of learning and their own life journeys, then we can see many more innovations taking off. We can see many more interesting projects that people can pursue. We will certainly want to support young people in this endeavor And that's why we are doing a lot more these days through the National Youth Council, through many platforms to encourage young people to take charge, to have the ability, to have resources, to pursue projects that they care about. And if there are ideas, if many of you have things you would like to do, we strongly encourage you to take that initiative, make full use of the schemes and the projects that we have, to try out different ideas, to implement something, whether as an enterprise project or as a community project. And there are many opportunities for young people to do so.
And definitely, I think, DPM Lawrence, I think you started the National Youth Fund.
That's right.
Back in the day.
That's right. And I'm sure there are more resources now, but whether it's through the National Youth Fund, whether it's through Changemaker grants, there are opportunities for young people to pursue these opportunities in all the different areas that they care deeply about.
Yeah, just wanted to say, because I shared this concept called the InnoShield, right? Basically to create a buffer, a financial buffer for people wanting to go into startups. Because if they, in the chance that they fail, right? For example, we give them 3 months of income coverage. So do you think this would work on a national policy-wise?
No, as a policy, obviously, we'll have to study whether or not there is resources. There are always demands for resources. So whether there will be resources that can be applied and how we might put together a scheme or policy like that. So we are open to ideas, but it's always a question of how do we, given limited resources, put them to the best possible use. But the basic idea, the underlying motivation behind what you are trying to do is to really give more encouragement to young people to try to do things and maybe even to fail. And if they were to fail, they will feel that sense of assurance that the failure or the setback will not be, you know, there will be protection for them and they can bounce back quickly. So the basic idea of being able to provide better assurances, a platform where young people can try things, fail, and then bounce back again to the next venture. That intent, that objective is something that the government shares. How to go about doing it? What policies should we put in place? That's something we will have to think hard about.
Yeah, maybe I can ask you a question before we wrap up, right? So how would you describe your relationship with failure or setbacks? What's a mindset that you've applied to help navigate through these challenges?
The way I see things is very much like I mentioned just now. There will I've been through setbacks, bumps along the road. Like I mentioned just now, even in my first application, already failed, right? I applied to MFA, didn't get the job. It's okay. I mean, that's fine. And then I went to a different ministry to work. Along the way, my colleagues did better than me at the start of the career. A lot of them moved up faster than me. But that's fine. You do whatever you do.
And was it really fine?
It's okay. I mean, there's... You know, in the end, my individual personal attitude in life is don't compare. You do the best you can. There are many things you can't control, right? Why get worked up over things you can't control? And if the organization doesn't treat you well, then you leave the organization. You find a different place to go to, right? So that's why I said I was almost prepared to leave. I thought that maybe the private sector might be better. I even had a job offer. I was planning to leave already. And then my bosses sat me down, persuaded me not to. Just consider staying on for a while. So I decided to stay on for a while. But as I stayed on a bit longer, I was given more work assignments. And then I found that the new work assignments that I got were more interesting, more challenging. They gave me more fulfillment as well. And so... So interestingly, the longer I stayed, then the thought of leaving dissipated and I found the work in the public service more and more fulfilling. And that's how over time I realized that this was my calling. This is something I really enjoy doing and I stayed on and I stayed on and I pursued what I'm doing now in public service. So but this is, like I said, a process of discovery. It's not something that happened to me from the day one I graduate. I say, look, I want to be a public servant. It wasn't like that.
You didn't wake up and like, I want to be DPM right now.
No, I certainly didn't. I don't know that it happens to anyone like that, that you wake up from day one and you say, oh, this is... Maybe if you are lucky enough that you, from a very young age, you think this is truly my passion. Good for you. Power to you if you really have that. But in my interactions with many people, I find that even people with very strong views at a young age, these views change with your own life experiences. And it's okay, because it's all about discovering, right? And learning about yourself along the way. And what's more important, I feel, is that whatever decision you make, whatever choice, whatever task you are assigned, you take the attitude that I want to do the best possible. Not just for myself, but because if I put in my best effort, I think that makes the work more fulfilling. This is not about saying that quiet quitting is bad, but the best for every individual is up to the individual to define. Your best may be different from another person's best, but that's okay. You don't have to compare. You do your best at whatever you do, and you keep on improving. You will realize that your best today is at this level, but then maybe there's a little bit more you can go, and then you learn the next round. And along the way, maybe you make some mistakes. You get some constructive criticism that, oh, your work is not so good here. And that's fine. You take in the input and you do better the next time around. So that's been the attitude I've taken throughout my life.
Oh, that's fantastic. And I think you're really reinforcing the whole idea of growth mindset, being curious about, you know, what's to come, even in the face of failure or setbacks, right? Thank you so much for sharing your perspectives, and everyone for sharing your questions and insight.
I thought you were asking about
housing. Actually, I was asking about housing. Yes, thank you.
The issue on singles and housing.
Yes.